Welcome back to the Ryer on YouTube channel. Travis Ryer back with you on a Monday night. It is second helping, my great friend, longtime college football analyst, most recently down in Jacksonville, Florida for First Coast News. There he is, Brent Beard, checking in with our show mascot on a Monday night. Chino.
Well, a quick story. Chino spent about 2 hours yesterday in the emergency vet clinic.
Oh, no, Chino.
He was not doing well. He's doing better today, so we're
Saw that college football playoff reveal, huh?
I think that's exactly
what happened. Had to rush him to help.
Yeah. So he, we're glad he's doing a little bit better. Chino is 16 years old, and sometimes, like his father, shows his age, and sometimes he doesn't. So
now
he's better.
Brent, are cat years and dog years the same thing?
That's a great question. I'm not sure about
that.
They are.
How about that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Little Josie checking in here in the show chat. We'd love to hear from all of you on this Monday evening. He sends out a Roll Tide, his Crimson Tide, as we know. Brent, we'll get into this. What we're going to do tonight, we're going to give some early impressions, some initial impressions as it relates to the Southeastern Conference and its CFP matchups, its bowl matchups. So we're going to work through all of that. I feel like, though, Brent, we also have to review a little bit. I mean, we did have a Southeastern Conference championship game over the weekend, and it delivered in a lot of ways. Certainly had a finish, the first overtime SEC championship game in game history. So there was that. We both like Georgia going into the game. We did not have it going to overtime. I don't think, though, either one of us are surprised that this game ended up requiring, extra possessions to sort of figure out. But, boy, just some things we didn't anticipate. Obviously, Carson Beck going down with an injury.
Yes.
Gunnar Stockton coming in and really playing gutty football. Maybe showing you some Stetson Bennett a little bit in the way he plays the game. And then I didn't really have Trevor Etienne being a big factor in that
game. I agree. We didn't think he would, frankly, even play, did we, Trav? But listen, people may not have heard this, but this is a big injury for Georgia because they've got maybe the best overall special teams in the conference, but Brett Thorson, a knee injury to his non-kicking leg, season-ending surgery, and he's out. So, Trav, as a former kicker yourself, they'll find somebody, but the Georgia media I talked to said that this guy at times has been the best punter in the nation.
Oh, he has been. The thing about Thorson is that he not only flips the field in terms of distance on his kicks, he puts them up there into the stratosphere. They don't get returned a lot, just because they're 60 plus yards or something like that. He has that ability to give you both the distance and the hang time. So you're right. As you get deeper into this playoff, that could show up for sure, but still questions too about Carson Beck moving forward with that elbow injury. The type of injury, if you're a baseball pitcher, you definitely don't want. If it is a tear of the UCL, we don't know for sure. I know there's been reports out there, nothing confirmed by the University of Georgia at this point. But I would say if there is a silver lining and all that, you got an opportunity last Saturday in Atlanta to really get your backup quarterback not only into the game, but help you win the game. Because that almost felt a little bit like a reverse Jalen Hurts to an Eagle.
Yeah.
And this time it worked in Georgia's favor. Not that it wanted it to go that way, but it played out that way.
Yeah, it really did. And Kirby has been bemoaning the fact that he's wanted to get Gunnar Stockton in the game more in earlier in the season, but has not been able to do so. Georgia is still struggling somewhat with these wide receivers. They lead the nation in drop passes for wide receivers, and was told last week by Georgia media that what they're trying to do is throw the ball to the tight ends like Oscar to help to throw them to the running back, Trav, to keep from having to throw the receivers all the time.
Well, and hey, maybe it – maybe postseason ETN is going to be a real thing moving forward. That would certainly help that team. We talked about it going into that game last week too, that we felt like the Georgia offensive line was going to be better. You know, you think about it from the Texas perspective, it just felt like there were some flash plays, some splash plays from that Texas offense. But in terms of sustaining things, Sark's group really struggled with that. And, you know, they've had some place kicking woes of their own during the 2024 season with Bert Auburn. And he had some struggles even, I think, a year ago. He has a couple of misses in the game that come up big. Kicking game was important, but Georgia with a well-earned victory over the Texas Longhorns. And then it plays into Selection Sunday. And we were all waiting on that, especially after the late night event Saturday in Charlotte. Clemson seemingly in control of that ACC championship game. Clemson, as we saw against South Carolina, not exactly a fourth quarter team. SMU made good use of that and put that thing in a tie game before Clemson wins it with a 56-yard walk-off field goal outdoors. That's what made it impressive to me, too.
Really?
Wasn't just that it was 56 yards from a college kicker. It was outdoors. That wasn't a dome kick. So all the credit in the world to Clemson. But once that happened, you know, you wondered how that would shake or affect the committee. Although the resume had not changed at all. It was still a loss for SMU. So some of the same things that you were deducting from SMU going into the game and maybe thinking about in relation to Miami's resume, those things did not change. But the nature of the finish, the way that it wrapped up in Charlotte, it had to impact the committee ultimately in the final evaluation.
Well, I think we've seen enough of these situations even in the four-team playoff to where the last game the committee sees has a real impact on them. Before I get into SMU, I did want to add, too, man, I haven't seen this stat in a while, and no wonder Clemson ended up winning at the end. Clemson had zero penalties in the game. Treff, zero penalties for the first time since 1952.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, that is impressive to play clean football, but it goes back to, too, you got a veteran quarterback. That helps on that side of the ball. And, you know, look, Clemson deserves credit even after going 0-2 against SEC competition for taking advantage of its opportunity that it wouldn't have gotten if Syracuse doesn't knock off Miami the previous weekend up in north upstate New York. So, a lot of things came together here over these final two weekends. Again, when you talk about it just in terms of resume, SMU's was still light, especially in the way of signature type of wins. I think the committee ultimately overvalued SMU all season long.
Yes.
I said this on yesterday's show here on the channel. SMU all along should have been in that area with Arizona State, Iowa State.
Yes. You know,
15 through 18.
Yes.
Committee, for some reason, really valued SMU based on largely nothing as far as quality wins. And then, you know, kind of put itself in a corner a little bit and ultimately wasn't going to penalize the Mustangs there once those CFP. You know, the thing I go back to, too, Brent, and it's not just an Alabama thing. I think that's where it ultimately came down to, obviously, was SMU or Alabama. But, you know, what the committee said, I thought, was, look, we think SMU would be the fourth best team in the SEC. Because in taking SMU or taking a second ACC team, whether it was, you know, had to take Clemson, that's essentially the message I took from it. And and understanding that SMU schedule was nothing like what Alabama, Ole Miss, SC took on over the course of the 2024 season.
Well, I certainly appreciated what you had to say yesterday, and I agree with that. It's a trap. I mean, it's a situation with their people saying, look at SMU's resume. Well, to quote you, is, well, they really don't have a resume.
They have worse than a bad resume. They don't have a resume. I mean, that's SMU.
I get 11-2, but 0-2 versus top 25 teams. And that's something that frankly just can't be ignored. And look, without belaboring the Alabama point too long, but it is important to get into it. I mean, Trav, even on ESPN, when you put the two resumes side by side, there frankly was not even a comparison, was it?
Well, and the kind of irony of it all was I saw a college basketball reporter who obviously wanted SMU in.
Yeah.
Said, well, why don't we put the records of the teams up on the graphic? And my response to him was probably the same reason why we don't do it in college basketball when we have the tournament selection show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because we have teams in college basketball that have maybe four or five more losses than another team, but they're still seeded higher, maybe a line or two higher, three higher.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but it goes back to subjectivity. And, you know, again, look, ownership for some of this, I said this yesterday too. I wanted your thoughts. You can't give Alabama a pass on all. Yeah. Yeah. They're not without some good bit of blame.
Yeah.
You had three road games between Vanderbilt, Oklahoma, and Tennessee. You win one of those.
That's right.
You're safe. Yeah. You're safe as Chino here on a Monday night. So I can't absolve Alabama or Ole Miss or South Carolina of its sins entirely. They surrendered control in large part to the committee and, you know, kind of handed the committee the hammer.
Yeah.
And the committee made use of it.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I've heard this argument. I think it has some validity. And Trent, my question is, you mentioned Alabama, South Carolina, and Ole Miss. And this is telling, would Las Vegas give SMU the nod and the odds with either of the three?
No, that's where it flies in the face of reality, I think. Lumpy Diz here in the show chat asked a good question too. I still haven't figured this one out. Why is SMU ranked higher than Clemson in the college football playoff? Right.
Yeah, yes. Well, you know. And I think they had SMU around that 8 or 9 mark. And this really goes back to what you said a few minutes ago. That made a major difference in this. Instead of them being ranked where this, I mean, Clemson 16, BYU 17, Iowa State 18, and listen, you've even got Missouri 19, and that, you know, if they had reseeded and done all this, or maybe not even had a poll, if they would have come up with the poll before Championship Saturday, obviously SMU very, very likely would have been down closer to number 20 than they are number 10.
Yeah. Chuck Handback, an Alabama fan, checks in here and says, as much as I am disappointed, Bama did this to themselves. Problem is the committee overrated SMU, Boise State, and Indiana, and then they were scared to drop them. Yeah, I mean, look, we can go through this really other than Oregon and Georgia. And Georgia as a two-loss team, some people might even point at, but obviously as the SEC champ, that changes things significantly and kind of question the resumes, including Texas.
Yes.
Yeah. We're talking about really quality wins and, you know, who was seated where and, you know, who's going on the road. You know, Penn State is a damn – I can't figure it out.
No.
That's the one I really don't get. And, boy, when you look at Penn State's path, especially home game against SMU on the 20th, noon kickoff, and then what? I guess the potential win that game, then you go to the Fiesta and play Boise.
Yes, yes.
In the quarters. I mean, it's great to be the sixth seed who really doesn't have a quality win. What was Penn State's win this season? Was it on the road at SC?
Yeah.
6-6 SC team?
Right, right.
Was it on the road at Minnesota? when they needed every bit of every second in Minneapolis to get past a very average Minnesota team. None of it really makes sense to me, but I think Chuck has the right answer there. That's the way I look at it too, Chuck. Two things can be true. The committee can get it wrong, but then there's also ownership that the teams that were just outside the cut line have to take on themselves. So, Brent, just the overriding thoughts, and what we'll do again is we'll go through this bowl schedule. We'll go through the CFP schedule as it relates to the Southeastern Conference. Also, you talk about waiting on a response. Have we heard from Greg Sankey yet?
No.
Since we haven't, does that surprise you that we haven't? We've heard from Greg Byrne. We heard from the other Greg, the Alabama athletic director.
Who
essentially laid down the gauntlet of, what's the use in playing some of these prime out-of-conference games? And as we both know, the problem for Alabama this time really wasn't out of conference. It was three conference losses, with two of them being to 6-6 teams. So I think his point, though, is why expose yourself even to the potential of those kind of losses if you're going to have teams that really don't have a resume like SMU that are getting in the 12 over teams that may have one more loss but actually have, multiple three type of quality wins. But what do you think Sankey's response? Do you think he's trying to just sit back and he doesn't want to kind of overshadow the event and, trying to do the right thing from that regard? Also, if you come out and blast the committee, I guess, and then maybe your teams lay eggs in this in this opening round, it could come back to look pretty bad. What do you think about that?
Well, you and I both know that Sankey can be pretty calculated at times, and he will and look, people may miss this. In the SEC championship game, Sankey basically got blasted awarding the trophy by Kirby by really criticizing the schedule of being sent on the road. And there's Sankey, Trav, could have been, 5 feet from him? So
That's when you know Kirby is the boss of the family, so to speak.
Absolutely. Yeah,
if it was like The Sopranos or Godfather or something, it's Kirby now. Kirby, he's the boss. He's the Don.
And let me mention a couple things to you, too. One, I'll give you three real quick. One, and this will be talked about some, the representation on the committee, from what I remember, the Arkansas AD was basically only representatives for the SEC. Now Mike Riley is on the committee, who played at Alabama, but his recusal was another team. And the other thought that I've heard is there may be as many as four on that committee that had ties to the ACC. So I'm not trying to say there's conspiracy theory here, but some of these things are coming out. But as far as what happens next or what they need to look at is I've heard some interesting things about, should the college football playoff kind of have a net ranking as they do in basketball, quad one, two,
maybe,
or three?
Maybe just go back to the BCS formula.
Didn't
we have a net ranking system with that?
They didn't call it that, but I think you can make that argument.
Computer generated, taking in various factors.
Essentially
took the humans out of it.
Yeah, right. And then, should there be a receding of the field? Mm-hmm. I know that Greg Sankey and Jack Swarbrick of Notre Dame were the only two in favor of receding the entire field at that point. So, but look, you and I both know Sankey is not happy with only three SEC teams. And I would imagine his not coming out at this point, he will select a time where that will be appropriate, but don't think he is not talking to people behind the scenes.
He's going to be very pointed in his comments when they do come about, I would think. I talked about this yesterday too. You think about it now, it's surprising that the SEC let this 12-team deal come off without basically guaranteed assurances. Four, not two, not three, but four. So I think as we think about 2026 and moving forward, I don't think the SEC will allow something like that to happen.
No, absolutely not.
Let's get into some of the early thoughts on the bowl season and also the college football playoff as it relates to SEC teams. And we're going to get started that Friday that we have our first round game. It's actually going to turn into, I guess, a bit of a doubleheader there on the 20th. More than a doubleheader, because you're going to have bowl game action kicking off at noon Eastern with the Staff DNA Cure Bowl in Orlando at noon. And then at 3:30 over in Tampa, you're going to have the Gasparilla Bowl. The Florida Gators taking on the Green Wave of Tulane. That used to be an SEC matchup like 100 years ago, right? Tulane,
really.
Former SEC member. But boy, this is an interesting spot for the Gators.
It is.
I think it's a favorable spot because I think we learned in the last day or so Tulane quarterback Darian Mensah is hitting the transfer portal. So just player availability, right? As we get into some of these matchups, how that's going to look for some of these teams. Florida just riding an incredible wave of momentum, both on the field, on the recruiting trail, going to be an attractive portal destination for players on the move coming in, maybe from elsewhere. You know what else I like about this for Florida too? Play the game on December the 20th, get it over. You know, get it done. You got players that are beat up or might need some things done. You can do that before the new year. I like being able to get into this game and get out. And, well, look, proximity, you love that for Florida. Should be a big Florida crowd down in Tampa.
And people may not have heard, Caleb Banks, the defensive tackle, is coming back next year. So he has made that known, and he has made his presence known during this time also. And look, I want to say also about Tulane, John Sumrall, who is at Troy and did a really good job there, has done a really good job at Tulane. Trav is adamant that he is not leaving Tulane right now. This is a guy I think is good enough to where he can kind of bide his time and maybe even end up in the SEC before it's over. Now, the chuckle I got today, and I'm gonna link him back to Florida, was Mike Gundy, who now after a kind of a rather strange weekend where he was fired, and now then they worked it out at Oklahoma State.
That was crazy.
It really was, wouldn't it? But and people may not have heard this, Gundy hiring veteran Todd Grantham to be his D coordinator. So Grantham back in the league. Grantham usually has a good first year, and then the second year is, shall we say, less than stellar. Trav, wherever he's been, but look, back to your point. Incredible momentum for Florida, really good recruiting class inside the top 10. And yes, they will do exceptionally well in the portal and, frankly, go into the offseason, could we fairly say, with as much momentum as anybody?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely could. Absolutely. John Sumrall also, as you mentioned, the coach at Tulane, he's got some ties to Kentucky.
He does.
So when you talk about the potential for SEC, maybe down the road, I would think Kentucky would be a spot that, at least from the Kentucky side of things, might be something they would like to see at some point post Mark Stoops. It's a great setup for the Gators. Again, I think playing on the 20th, home game essentially down in Tampa.
Yes.
Questions with your opponent in terms of roster. Lagway should be as healthy as he's been since before the Georgia game. And you just look to continue on this wave of feel goodness that has been percolating through Alachua County here over the last month or so. Speaking of the Gators, Eric Stanley asked us here in the show chat, who you guys got? 11-2 Penn State, 7-5 Florida on a neutral field. That'd be a tough pick. I mean, look, I bag on Penn State. But here's what I know too. And look, I know you get way out in the weeds if you start putting too much into past bowl games with past teams. But I saw Ole Miss pretty much drag Penn State in a bowl game last year.
Yes.
So at this point, it'd be hard for me not to pick Florida. Florida's a well-rounded football team right now.
They are. Yeah.
Both sides of the ball. I know they didn't play their best game against Florida State, but didn't play their best game on the road, still won by 20.
That's right.
So,
yes.
It might be hard to pick against Florida in that situation.
It would. I think Florida's best area of growth, maybe their defense, not 19 sacks last year, Trav, this year 38. How about that?
And just really blew up over the back half, it felt like, of the 2024 season. So we move into the very next day. Of course, we've got a college football playoff first round game later that night on the 20th, Indiana at Notre Dame. You know, that's kind of takes me back to my childhood, maybe one of those Saturday afternoon college basketball matchups, with Dick McGuire and Dick Enberg. I would sit there with pops and watch those broadcasts on NBC. Instead, it's going to be Hoosiers and Irish in a real regional game up in South Bend. Should be nice and warm at 8 Eastern on the night of the 20th. Then, of course, SMU, Penn State the next day in the early game of the CFP. Then you get into the SEC games, the varsity games. Clemson at Texas. Kate Klubnik going home to take on the Longhorns. Boy, you kind of wonder about Texas at this point. What I don't wonder about is that defense.
Yes.
And so I think nothing else, the defense gets them through. But offensively, just sustaining, again, it wasn't just something that was a problem against Georgia. I mean, it was a problem against Arkansas.
Sure was.
A couple of 3 weeks ago. So what are your thoughts there with Texas early on, looking at that matchup in a home matchup with the Clemson Tigers?
Well, and look, in Clemson, I think Georgia's got the better defense between Georgia and Clemson, but Clemson's got Clemson's front seven as good as anybody, frankly, with Peter Woods and that group. With that, and as a matter of fact, give Georgia credit, held Texas to 31 yards in the second game and 29 yards in the first game. So, and look, you and I talked last week, the Weisner kid really had showed out. They had gained almost 500 yards in two games. So I would say, Trav, going to the playoffs, my first question would be, can Texas run the ball?
Yeah, that would be mine too. I hear you. I think Clemson's defensive front was the reason why I liked them against SMU. But even as good as that group is, and Chris Rump does a hell of a job coaching those guys,
he does.
Clemson's offense can kind of lead those guys out to dry over the course of a game. You talk about kind of mirror images, these two offenses, which sounds strange because Klubnik's had a really nice year. Ewers, Quinn Ewers can be a little bit up and down. It makes me wonder with this time between, do you put in something for Arch? I'm not saying a series, but red zone offense. We get to the 20, we get inside the 20. We're coming in with Arch and we're going to try to do some things with his mobility and really commit to it. That's going to be an interesting matchup. Early on, I like Texas maybe pretty big in that game because I think the Texas defense can really stymie that Clemson offense. So,
and my thing too, and you alluded to it, Trav, listen, their drives, two or three in a row, Clemson looks like a well-oiled machine. And then you've got two or three drives that Clemson just basically checks out. I'm not sure what that's about. The same thing happened in the South Carolina game.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It happened against SMU.
Yeah.
You know, up big, what, 31-14?
Sure.
Next thing you know, it's 31 all.
Yeah, really.
Fighting for your life. So also on Saturday in the college football playoff, first round action. This is another one. I feel like the SEC, I know Tennessee fans, some Tennessee fans were especially happy because Alabama got left out. But my thought was a little, I think Tennessee kind of got screwed too.
Yeah,
absolutely. And being sent on the road, especially with Penn State at home. Yeah. But then also even Ohio State getting a home game out of all this.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if we want to get into resume again with Ohio State, we can do that. Mm-hmm. I know they had the home win over Indiana. Otherwise, just not a lot to go on there with the Buckeyes. I mean, they went an entire first month of the season without really playing a game. But it is Tennessee at the Horseshoe. You know, I think if you're Tennessee, you feel fine with this matchup.
Yeah,
obviously. Oh, absolutely. And I know Herb Street caught some grief on the selection show yesterday because he said it might actually be a bad thing for Ohio State to be home because the Ohio State fans might be on Ryan Day to the extent where it's a detriment to the Buckeyes. I don't know if I buy that, but put it this way, if Tennessee can have some early success, maybe part of what Herbie was saying has a chance to come to fruition in this game.
Well, I tell you what, and the injuries may define this game, Trav. Ohio State's really banged up on their offensive line.
Yep.
Tennessee's banged up in the skill positions. Brew McCoy, Squirrel White, Deontay Thompson, Dylan Sampson all left the Vanderbilt game. Now, they should be okay, you would think, the majority of them, especially with the layoff that they've had. For Tennessee in a game like this, cold weather, who knows if it, what kind of participation, snow, ice you're going to have in a game like this. But that Dylan Sampson running game and that front seven on Tennessee with that defense, they travel pretty well.
They do. That's why I think, you know, Tennessee should feel great about this matchup. You said it with that Ohio State offensive line down a couple of key starters. When you're out, when you're without your left tackle and your center, that's usually
problematic.
And look, I didn't think I would have felt this way maybe a month ago, but right now I'm probably liking Nico over Will Howard.
Yeah, true.
Ohio State quarterback.
Really?
So if it comes down to quarterback play, perhaps Tennessee ends up actually having the edge. In that department, we'll get more into the particulars of this game. Just a fascinating matchup.
It is.
Up in Columbus, Ohio on the 21st. That, too, think about weather and the impact of it. That is an 8 Eastern kickoff on December the 21st in Columbus, Ohio. So,
wow.
You know, we'll kind of see how that rides. As we move throughout and into more of the SEC bowl action, Georgia Tech and Vanderbilt in the Birmingham Bowl.
Yes.
That's my that's my birthday bowl, December the 27th.
It really is.
That's my gift. Well, I get a couple of gifts that day. I get a couple of three SEC teams in action on the 27th. Georgia Tech and Vanderbilt. This game in Birmingham, Brent, between these two offenses and the way they play, this game could get done in under 2.5 hours.
Could this be done, Trav? Could this be 13-10 type thing before it's over?
Kicks off at 3:30 Eastern. Yeah. You're out of there shortly after sunset.
And Trav, ready for the Bright Star in Birmingham, right?
They just cruise over to Bright Star in Bessemer. Or you could go get some really great Asian cuisine at the shoe shop there in the downtown area. Those are good folks. They watch the show, so we like to shout them out. Boy, great ramen. There you go. Unsolicited there. And then, again, the quarterbacks for both those teams, Haynes King, Diego Pavia,
right.
Guys that don't have any problem selling out for their teams.
No.
So that has the potential for a Birmingham Bowl to actually be pretty fun. And whatever fan base Vanderbilt has should be making that trip down 65.
Oh, yeah.
From Nashville. And Georgia Tech, likewise. Georgia Tech, I mean, this is a day trip game for both these fan bases. Atlanta to Birmingham, Nashville to Birmingham. you know, you hope for the Birmingham Bowl people. It's a pretty good crowd. One you wonder about a little bit is the Liberty Bowl at 7 o'clock that night. Talk about the chance for chilly conditions in Memphis, Tennessee. Texas Tech taking on Arkansas. And boy, there's been, I guess, some potential news. Petrino talked about maybe with the Charlotte job. That didn't really come to fruition. Mm-hmm. Transfer portal news for the Razorbacks, I know, here in the last couple of days, Brent. And still not a fan base that sounds like it's totally behind Sam Pittman in any form or fashion. Pittman apparently going to undergo hip replacement pretty much when the clock hits triple zeros. Coached the last game against Missouri from the press box in Como. So, you hate to put too much on a bowl game like this, but just for the sake of the morale of that fan base moving forward, this is a game Arkansas could really use.
Well, and the thing they can't afford to happen is to get into a 28-7 type thing and just not be able to stop anybody and be unable to score. But Petrino has done a good job. It's been obvious. It came out last week that Pittman was coming back. And kudos to him for hopefully being able to right the ship in that situation too. Hopefully Green at quarterback will be healthy. But I agree with that. Arkansas really needs a win to have that fan base into with some expectations and looking forward to next year.
Yeah, even with a win, there's going to be pessimistic viewpoint for a lot of those folks. But boy, with a loss, it's not going to do much to cure the noise currently in Northwest Arkansas. Late night on December the 27th. How about this? It is SEC After Dark.
It is
10:30 Eastern kickoff for the Las Vegas Bowl. I like the matchup. Texas A&M and USC.
I do too. Yeah.
This is one I'll stay up as late as I possibly can for. Right. You've got transfer portal news for the quarterbacks on both these teams. Now, both of these quarterbacks had pretty much been relegated to backup status when you talk about Miller Moss for USC, Connor Wigman for Texas A&M. But, and for SC especially, how about this? You have the opportunity to open the season in Vegas with a win over an SEC team and close the season in Vegas over an SEC team. And Lincoln Riley could use it, I think.
He could. Yeah. Riley, and I didn't take this seriously, but maybe it may have been agent stuff. Possibly looking at the UCF job that certainly did not work out. UCF has hired Scott Frost. Gus Malzahn moving on to FSU. I'm with you. I like this game too. Hated to see Connor Wigman go, but look, he's got some tread on the tires, and he in the right system, he could be effective. Trev, my question to you is, can Southern Cal block that A&M front seven on defense with Nick Skirton? Hopefully he will.
Yeah, a couple of those DLs, though, for A&M in the last day or so have declared for the NFL draft. Shamar Stewart.
Right, they did. Skirton.
So I guess we need to see who's playing.
Who's left, absolutely.
Yeah.
But if there's some pretty good representation there, I'm not sure USC can block them, frankly.
No. Still should be an intriguing matchup out in Vegas to cap the bowl action on the 27th. As we move forward and look at more matchups, you really get into, after all that SEC action on the 27th, you get into the 30th of December, Music City Bowl, Iowa and Missouri, black and gold going at it. Look, you know, if you're Missouri going against this Iowa offense, it might only take 10 points to get the job done.
Really? Absolutely.
And you know, you worry about opt-outs, you know,
in
a lot of these games. And probably in part because Brady Cook doesn't seem to have that type of future professionally. That's one guy you're not worried about.
In
this game, he's going to put it on the line. And it really kind of starts the first of the SEC Big Ten matchups that we get moving through the bowl season.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I'll be curious if Luther Burden, Theo Weiss, both those guys play. Yeah. If they listen, if they do with Cook, good point. Trav, if that happens and they're on fire early, this game could be over at halftime.
Yeah, it could be, you know, because Missouri isn't what they were last year defensively. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if you have to be against this Iowa offense. So we'll see how that goes under Kirk Ferentz, the longtime Iowa coach there. On the 31st, the next day, you've got a noon Eastern kickoff rematch from the Rose Bowl a year ago. Alabama taking on Michigan, a rejuvenated Michigan team after that just an incredible upset of the Ohio State Buckeyes. I guess at this point, though, is it really an upset anytime Michigan beats Ohio State? Really? Alabama feeling those effects of the college football playoff snub. Heard from, you know, we heard from Kalen DeBoer on Sunday night, and he sounded as if his expectation, other than a handful of transfer portalists that we've heard about from Alabama in the last day or so, he thinks he's going to have his guys for the most part for this game.
Yeah, and you know, this is another situation. This is the third bowl game in the past 5 years where Alabama's played in Michigan.
Yeah.
You know, at some point, it's time to play somebody else, but that's what we've got. I mean, there are a lot of questions here. Will be and my question is not so much will Jalen Milroe play, but will the backup see some action, which I think would be important to them. Obviously, Kendrick Law, Caleb Odom, a couple of guys from Bama in the portal, Danny Lewis, a tight end, and there will no doubt be some more yet to come. But I think Bama would do a good job bringing folks in. The question here to me is it would be Alabama's offensive line versus the Michigan defensive line that gave Ohio State fits, and what's Bama's momentum and motivation going into the game?
Yeah, I think this could be a grinder. When I think about the potential of a 17-14 game. And you're right. Alabama and Michigan, they have done it in the postseason, not just in recent years. I remember before it was the Outback Bowl, I think it was the Hall of Fame Bowl.
It was.
And went down there, it might have been 88.
Yeah, yeah.
87-88, Bobby Humphrey, Derek Thomas.
Yeah, yeah.
John Colasar caught one in the corner with John Mangum in coverage for Michigan to beat Alabama all those years ago. Was down there with Coach Smitty back in the late 80s. And then young Evan Ryer, well, he's not that young anymore. Our son, he's 28 years old.
Yeah.
His first college football game was Alabama-Michigan in the 1997 Outback Bowl. That was Gene Stallings' last game. That was Evan Ryer's first game. He was all of 9 months old. And when he took that one in down there. So some sentimental value with this matchup and where it is being played. As we also talk about another SEC Big Ten matchup, Brent, the Cheez-It Citrus Bowl. Was this a little bit of a surprise to you to see South Carolina go to Orlando instead of Alabama? Alabama going to Tampa? Hey, if you're the Citrus Bowl, I get it. South Carolina's on a heater.
Sure they are. Absolutely.
Those folks are really going to travel. Not that Alabama fans don't. Really under any circumstance, but South Carolina fan base is rabid right now. And you think about the SEC ties, even with Illinois on the other side, Brett Bielema, obviously previously the head coach at the University of Arkansas, and Luke Altmaier too.
That's right.
Illinois quarterback.
Yeah.
Was it Ole Miss earlier? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, my thought on this early would be Trav, when Shane Beamer is interviewed, I don't think there'll be any pretending that they're not motivated to show the College Football Playoff Committee about what they would have been capable of doing. And listen, we talked about Florida a few minutes ago. Trav, if South Carolina wins this game, How much momentum are they taking into the offseason?
Should be a ton. I mean, you got your quarterback for the next 2 years at least. You know that, Lenore Sellers. So, yeah, it's a great time to be a South Carolina Gamecock, and it's a matchup you should feel good about. Although I will say this for Brett, man. I think at some point, if there's a Big Ten Hall of Fame, you got to put Brett Bielema in it.
Yeah, you really do.
People forget about the job he did at Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A couple of Rose Bowls.
Yeah.
This is a top 25-ish team.
Yeah. They sure are.
In Illinois, which just doesn't really happen all that often up in Champaign. So as we continue to move forward and we think about the college football playoff resuming with those quarterfinal games, the potential is there in the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl for Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Might not be the worst draw for the Longhorns when it's all said and done, because Texas could go Clemson, Arizona State to Atlanta. And that was another part of this thing that was we had heard about it and knew about it, but to see it actually on the graphics that you got Boise State as the third overall seed and Arizona State as the fourth, it was still somewhat sobering to actually see that, you know, and on live television on Sunday. But boy, Texas, if it can navigate Clemson, then would take on Arizona State. Also Tennessee, if it can get past Ohio State, boy, you talk about a reward, get to go out to Pasadena, play in the Rose Bowl against number one Michigan, you know, kind of a tough draw there for the Vols when you think about Ohio State and Oregon. But if you want to send a message for the SEC in relation to the Big Ten, Tennessee has a great opportunity, because if you can go through Ohio State and Oregon in back-to-back games, that's going to sound quite the signal there. And then also in the Sugar Bowl, Georgia with the bye awaits the winner of Indiana Notre Dame. I think Georgia's in good shape too, as far as this draw and, you know, how that could potentially work for the Bulldogs, because the other side of Georgia is Boise State, Penn State, SMU. I mean, I know we got to find out about Carson Beck, but
right.
This kind of feels like if you win the quarterfinal, you can go ahead and make plans.
Yeah, you sure can.
To be back close to home when the championship game rolls around, Brett.
Well, look, even without if you got to go with Gunnar Stockton, at least at this point, you can depend on your running game and Nate Frazier and what he's been able to do, like the tight ends, offensive and defensive line for the Dogs. Look, I don't care what level we are and where we are in the season. If you can run the ball and play defense, again, as we said about Tennessee, you're going places and you can advance even if you quarterback shaky.
Indiana feels kind of like a poor man's Washington from last year.
Yeah.
Is what they kind of feel like to me in terms of offensively the problems they can pose for you. Notre Dame, physicality is what the Irish does, and Georgia's fine with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Notre Dame does it well. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people are still hung up on that Northern Illinois loss from early in the season. I get it. But I will say this for the Irish. When they've needed to just take care of business against inferior opponents, they've been very impressive in doing so. The part of the problem is we haven't seen Notre Dame probably enough this year against the Georgias and the Texases and you know, the Oregon type of teams this year, to feel all that confident in picking the Irish. You know, that could be like a 1981 rematch. Sugar Bowl when Herschel played with the separated shoulder and Georgia won the national championship down there in Herschel's true freshman season with the Georgia Bulldogs. And then we get to January 2nd. We got the Tax Slayer Gator Bowl. I like this standalone game for the Gator Bowl. It's Thursday night. It's 7:30 primetime. And you're going to have Lane Kiffin doing his thing with that Ole Miss offense against Manny Diaz and his Duke Blue Devils.
I'm just wondering how many players for Ole Miss might opt out of this one. That would be my big concern.
You know, Trey Harris is out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, Jackson Dart, is a gamer. I think he will play.
I'd be surprised if he didn't play.
Yeah, I would too. Absolutely. But, you know, who's going to be your running back in this game? Is that front seven going to be back? So I'll be curious as much as anything else. Has Lane recuperated from that Florida loss and missing the playoff? And what is his demeanor going to be for this game as much as anything?
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. It's going to be that kind of game. And, you know, for the Gator Bowl, I like the standalone. I like the primetime.
Yes.
But I'm guessing the Gator Bowl was kind of hoping they would get South Carolina. That's where these bowls get impacted too, by what happens with the CFP.
Yes.
Right. Because, you know, although, you know, South Carolina obviously moved up, but boy, Florida and the Gator would have been, I think, more ideal, but it'll be a fun game to watch. I actually took in a Gator Bowl. You talk about the late 80s. It's a blur. But Ole Miss, you probably remember this, Brent. Ole Miss played Michigan in a Gator Bowl.
Yes. Yes, they sure did.
And that may have been the last time Ole Miss has been to Jacksonville.
Yeah.
And Ole Miss just drummed.
Yeah, I remember that. I mean,
no, Michigan drummed.
Yeah, yes.
Ole Miss in that game. It was pretty bloody, but we'll see what happens with Lane and his team this time around in Duval. Brent, you got anything else? That's it. That's where we're at in these early thoughts on these bowl games and these CFP matchups. What else you got for us? We got your Heisman Trophy ballot in. We can't talk about it until after the fact. But I will ask you this as it relates to the Heisman Trophy. Four finalists headed to New York. Cam Ward, Dylan Gabriel, Travis Hunter, the running back from Boise, Gianti.
Genty.
Are you surprised there's four? Is that about what you thought there would be?
No, I thought there'd be three. Okay. I was surprised that there's four. Now, look, I think Cam Ward certainly deserves it. With us doing an SEC show, the thing that really is shocking probably to a lot of our viewers is, if people are wondering, it's the first time since 2017, no one from the SEC will be in attendance.
Other than prior winners.
Yes.
You know, Steve Spurrier will be there.
Yeah.
Steve will be there. Yeah, you'll have some of the
Mark Ingram. Probably, yeah.
Yeah, you won't have Devontae Smith or Derrick Henry. They're playing the professional football still.
Yes, they are.
Of the retired players, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and again, we had to have our votes in today at 5. They tabulated it very quickly. Now we know what it's going to be. Listen, I won't get in this long, but I still have a real problem. They will not let us discuss who we voted for. And to me, Trav, we used to be able to do that, and it caused some discussion about the award throughout the week.
Creates intrigue. Yeah.
Now when you can't talk about it, the award's not talked about as much as it probably needs to be. And it is the number one award for college football.
Yeah.
And you know, when you kind of, I guess I understand why we do it. I mean, we have to basically check off on a form that we will not disclose who we voted for. I just think we lose a real opportunity with the Heisman Trophy, as important as it is to be able to talk about this the entire week, and we can't.
Totally agree. You know, there was a time when it was such a big deal, I could kind of get that.
Yeah.
But we're not there anymore, with so much content that we get on a daily basis, and understanding it is still very much a prestigious honor. And as you said, the number one individual honor in maybe all of college athletics.
Yeah,
it's absolutely. It needs to be talked about more. I think that could help situation for sure. Well, Brent, as always, appreciate you taking the time here on the program. We are going to still be right here with you.
That's right.
On Ryer on YouTube. We never sleep here on the channel. So if you haven't subscribed to the channel as of yet, hit that subscribe button. Turn on those notifications. Hit us with a thumbs up, a like. That would help us out tremendously as well. As always, Brent, enjoyed it.
My pleasure. And we will follow the portal. We will follow the SEC schedule reveal. How about that, Trav? Do we need another reveal coming up?
SEC,
on Wednesday at 7 o'clock on the SEC network.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Maybe that's when we'll get the appearance of Greg Sankey. Maybe take a few shots in relation to going ahead and looking ahead to next year's schedule.
Hey, Trav, if somehow Sankey's in the studio or he is virtually live, we may know something's coming, right?
We'll see how that goes for sure. So for Brent Beer, Travis Ryer, thanking you once again for joining us right here on Second Helping on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Until next time, so long, everybody.